The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, beginning Chapter 3, The Psychology of Self-Perfection, page 623. Essentially, then, this divine self-perfection is a conversion of the human into a likeness of and a fundamental oneness with the divine nature, a rapid shaping of the image of God in man and filling in of its ideal outlines. It is what is ordinarily termed sadrisha mukti, a liberation into the divine resemblance out of the bondage of the human seeming, or to use the expression of the Gita, sadharmya gati, a coming to be one in law of being with the supreme, universal, and indwelling divine. To perceive and have a right view of our way to such a transformation, we must form some sufficient working idea of the complex thing that this human nature at present is in the confused interminglings of its various principles, so that we may see the precise nature of the conversion each part of it must undergo and the most effective means for the conversion. How to disengage from this knot of thinking mortal matter the immortal it contains? From this mentalized vital animal man, the happy fullness of his submerged hints of Godhead, is the real problem of a human being and living. Life develops many first hints of the divine Life develops many first hints of the divinity without completely disengaging them. Yoga is the unraveling of the knot of life's difficulty. First of all, we have to know the central secret of the psychological complexity which creates the problem and all its difficulties. But an ordinary psychology, which only takes mind and its phenomena at their surface values, will be of no help to us. It will not give us the least guidance in this line of self-exploration and self-conversion. Still less can we find the clue in a scientific psychology with a materialistic basis which assumes that the body and the biological and physiological factors of our nature are not only the starting point, but the whole real foundation, and regards human mind as only a subtle development from the life and the body. That may be the actual truth of the animal side of human nature and of the human mind in so far as it is limited and conditioned by the physical part of our being. But the whole difference between man and the animal is that the animal mind, as we know it, cannot get for one moment away from its origins, cannot break out from the covering, the close chrysalis which the bodily life has spun round the soul, and become something greater than its present self, a more free, magnificent, and noble being. But in man, mind reveals itself as a greater energy escaping from the restrictions of the vital and physical formula of being. But even this is not all that man is or can be. He has in him the power to evolve and release a still greater ideal energy, which in its turn escapes out of the restrictions of the mental formula of his nature and discloses the supramental form, the ideal power of a spiritual being. In yoga, we have to travel beyond the physical nature and the superficial man, and to discover the workings of the whole nature of the real man. In other words, we must arrive at and use a psychophysical knowledge with a spiritual foundation. Man is, in his real nature, however obscure now this truth may be to our present understanding and self-consciousness, we must, for the purposes of yoga, have faith in it. And we shall then find that our faith is justified by an increasing experience and a greater self-knowledge. A spirit using the mind, life, and body for an individual and a communal experience and self-manifestation in the universe. This spirit is an infinite existence, limiting itself in apparent being for individual experience. It is an infinite consciousness, which defines itself in finite forms of consciousness for joy of various knowledge and various power of being. It is an infinite delight of being, expanding and contracting itself and its powers, concealing and discovering, formulating many terms of its joy of existence, even to an apparent obscuration and denial of its own nature. In itself, it is eternal Satchidananda. But this complexity, this knotting up and unraveling of the infinite in the finite, is the aspect we see it assume in universal and in individual nature. To discover the eternal Satchidananda, this essential self of our being within us, and live in it, is the stable basis to make its true nature evident and creative of a divine way of living in our instruments, supermind, mind, life, and body, the active principle of a spiritual perfection. Supermind, mind, life, and body are the four instruments which the spirit uses for its manifestation in the workings of nature. Supermind is spiritual consciousness, acting as a self-luminous knowledge, will, sense, aesthesis, energy, self-creative, and unveiling power of its own delight and being. Mind is the action of the same powers, but limited, and only very indirectly and partially illumined. Supermind lives in unity, though it plays with diversity. Mind lives in a separative action of diversity, though it may open to unity. Mind is not only capable of ignorance, but because it acts always partially and by limitation, it works characteristically as a power of ignorance. It may even, and it does, forget itself in a complete inconscience or nescience, awaken from it to the ignorance of a partial knowledge, and move from the ignorance towards a complete knowledge. That is its natural action in the human being. But it can never have by itself a complete knowledge. Supermind is incapable of real ignorance, even if it puts full knowledge behind it in the limitation of a particular working. Yet all its working refers back to what it has put behind it, and all is instinct with self-illumination, even if it involves itself in material nescience. It yet does there accurately the works of a perfect will and knowledge. Supermind lends itself to the action of the inferior instruments. It is always there indeed at the core as a secret support of their operations. In matter, it is an automatic action and effectuation of the hidden idea in things. In life, its most seizable form is instinct, an instinctive, subconscious, or partly subconscious knowledge and operation. In mind, it reveals itself as intuition, a swift, direct, and self-effective illumination of intelligence, will, sense, and aesthesis. But these are merely irradiations of the supermind, which accommodate themselves to the limited functioning of the obscura instruments. Its own characteristic nature is a gnosis, superconscient to mind, life, and body. Supermind, or gnosis, is the characteristic, illumined, significant action of spirit in its own native reality. Life is an energy of spirit subordinated to action of mind and body, which fulfills itself through mentality and physicality and acts as a link between them. It has its own characteristic operation, but nowhere works independently of mind and body. All energy of the spirit in action works in the two terms of existence and consciousness. For the self-formation of existence and the play and self-realization of consciousness, for the delight of existence and the delight of consciousness, in this inferior formulation of being in which we at present live, the spirit's energy of life works between the two terms of mind and matter, supporting and affecting the formulations of substance of matter and working as a material energy, supporting the formulations of consciousness of mind and the workings of mental energy, supporting the interaction of mind and body, and working as a sensory and nervous energy. What we call vitality is, for the purposes of our normal human existence, power of conscious being, emerging in matter, liberating from it and in it mind and the higher powers, and supporting their limited action in the physical life. Just as what we call mentality is power of conscious being awaking in body to light of its own consciousness and to consciousness of all the rest of being immediately around it, and working it first in the limited action set for it by life and body, but at certain points and at a certain height escaping from it to a partial action beyond this circle. But this is not the whole power, whether of life or mentality. They have planes of conscious existence of their own kind, other than this material level, where they are freer in their characteristic action. Matter, or body itself, is a limiting form of substance, of spirit, in which life and mind and spirit are involved, self-hidden, self-forgetful, by absorption in their own externalizing action, but bound to emerge from it by a self-compelling evolution. But matter, too, is capable of refining to subtler forms of substance, in which it becomes more apparently a formal density of life, of mind, of spirit. Man himself has, besides this gross material body, an encasing vital sheath, a mental body, a body of bliss and gnosis. But all matter, all body, contains within it the secret powers of these higher principles. Matter is a formation of life that has no real existence apart from the informing universal spirit, which gives it its energy and substance. The second half of this chapter, The Psychology of Self-Perfection, will come in the next reading.